step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Hour number two, 102.5, The Game, Chase and Big Joe. Time to talk some NFL, some Titans with our man Tim Hasselbeck from ESPN and also the head coach at Innsworth. Tim, what's up? How you doing?
Doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic. Happy birthday, sir, from a belated, but happy birthday. I know it was yesterday.
Thank you. What do you think? I look pretty good for 58?
Well, here we go, Tim. Our Dr. Crane has from celebrity birthdays yesterday. Please enjoy.
Chase McCabe, how old today is one Tim Hasselbeck?
Today's
Tim Hasselbeck's birthday.
Oh, we gotta text him. Happy birthday.
Yep.
I'm going to say Tim is 52.
53.
He's 48 and tag this, so oh, you guys think he's older than what he is.
Sorry, Tim.
You know, I was thinking Matthew because he's older. So I apologize, Tim.
Sorry, Tim.
Dude, 52? Wait a second. Like, Matthew's not even 52. He's older than me. Like, that's hurtful.
I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry, Tim.
Do I really look 52?
Like, no, you don't. You don't at all. So Matthew's 50?
He's 50. I'm not going to lie. That wounded me a little bit. I will say this. Like, one thing about losing your hair when you're younger, you know, like, I was taking my helmet off in college, and there was a lot of hair showing up in the helmet. I was like, oh, this is not... You know, so the comb over was like, you know, mid-20s, and then, you know, then it was fire it before it quits on you kind of thing. So basically from like 30 on, I'm going to have the same hairstyle. I do feel like that helps, right? Like, shouldn't that help from like 50 to like 65?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I would think so.
I would think so, too.
Well, I mean, I said 33, so they wasn't clipped on that right there.
Yeah, I know you didn't say 33, but, you know, I joke, I said 58, because it's like, well, if you tell people, like, hey, I'm 58, like, oh, you look good for 58. It's like, yeah, because I'm 48. That's why.
Oh, yes. Oh, that is good. Well, we hope it was a good birthday, and I apologize for saying you were 52. So,
man, it's going to take me a while to forgive you.
I know. Let's talk football, though. I've been intrigued, and we haven't really brought him up with you a ton, but, you know, I saw that Diego Pavia is going to visit with the Panthers. He's obviously doing the Gruden stuff, you know, on Barstool. What's kind of your thoughts on him as a potential NFL quarterback?
I think that a lot of people are going to look at him and – love the football player. You know, I think they're just going to see his production at the college level in a super athletic conference, which, you know, is going to produce a bunch of draft picks and has produced a bunch of people that, that are playing in the National Football League. So I think, well, look, in some ways, like Vandy, you know, part of their attraction to him is saying, like, wait a second, we saw this guy play against Auburn, you know, at New Mexico State. Like, how would he do here? And so I think there are going to be a lot of people that, you know, appreciate the football player that he is. I don't think there is going to be teams that look at him and say, like, he someday can be our starting quarterback. I don't think anyone's going to see that type of potential in him. And I think that when people say, like, okay, but is there a Taysom Hill opportunity for him? I think the testing numbers are going to really work against him. So, you know, it's kind of a long-winded way for me to say, I think it's very likely that he goes undrafted. I could see somebody in the final two rounds saying this guy's just too good of a football player for us not to find out what he could do for us. And so, you know, maybe he's a sixth, seventh round draft pick, and, you know, who knows how a team sees him. But I think if he were to have tested better, you know, because if you look up the testing numbers for a guy like Taysom Hill, I mean, they're freakish. So I think it would be a different conversation.
Do you think that he may get advised of switch positions? You know, there was always talk with Tebow, you know, should he play a H-back role, something like that. Do you see that with him, or do you think the size could play against him?
So here's what I'd say. So Tebow's obviously significantly bigger, right? So I think that would be the first point. You know, I think the thing with Tebow is, and it's a little bit like what I would say about, like, Taysom Hill, like, Tebow couldn't run like Taysom Hill. You know, Tebow was physical, but, you know, I don't think anybody really saw him as kind of like a fast twitch athlete. So I think a position move is unlikely just because of the size, you know, where Tebow was significantly bigger, you know, probably aligned more in terms of, you know, how, you know, some off the ball tight ends, you know, their stature. I think that's what, you know, Tebow, you know, matched up much more with that. What I could see somebody doing is, you know, checking him out as a quarterback and feeling like he could play in certain situations, short yardage, you know, third and, you know, short, you know, thing where he could be a player in that environment where you could trust him in the quick game as a passer. You could definitely runner. He could make decisions in the run game, you know, to give the ball rather than to keep it. There would have to be a lot of real estate that you invest in that in terms of practicing and things like that. And that just seems like a path teams won't be likely to go down.
Tim, let me ask you this. Say he gets to the seventh round and Pavia is still there, but he likes that maybe he could be go to the Lions, right? And then but the Lions aren't going to draft him. And there might be another team that drafts him. Can his agent say, listen, don't draft him. We want to sign with the Lions. That seventh round, is it better to be a seventh round pick no matter where you go, or an undrafted guy getting to pick where you think you have the best opportunity to play? I personally think getting drafted goes with you the rest of your life and it's a cool thing, but also you want to play. So would you rather be a UFA or would you rather be drafted in seventh round at a place where you might not play?
I think I've heard a lot of people, you know, talk about this, like, oh, hey, like, you'd rather the choice, right? So you don't get drafted, and now, you know, you can look at the roster of all these teams and you choose which one's the best fit. I would disagree and push back on that. These teams only have so many draft picks. They hold them in high regard and they're super valuable. Did the teams cut seventh round draft picks every year? Of course they do. But you only get so many picks. If in a team that, you know, gets seven and they're willing to use one on you, like, that means that they like you. That means there's some level of investment. There are people in the building that think you have a chance to help that football team. I think it is always better to get drafted than to be an undrafted guy, and now you're trying to assess which place is the right place for you. So I feel strongly about that. Having been an undrafted guy, you know, who was quickly cut before training camp, it's just the path to opportunity when you're undrafted. There are a lot of things that need to fall your way for it to work out.
Yeah, I agree. I think getting drafted, it would be really special to do all that. Do you think when Pavia last night was on the Gruden quarterback show and all that, can a guy hurt or help himself by going on there?
Oh, for sure. I think that the Gruden stuff is, you know, when you look at these evaluations that, you know, guys like me do on TV, by and large, they're incomplete evaluations, because in my estimation, a massive part of the quarterback evaluation process is the ability to sit down and talk with a guy, like hear his explanation of things, hear him describe what he knows or what he's looking at or what he thought, like, and then also understand what he's like in a quarterback meeting room. Can he explain something? Can he digest something and then, you know, be ready to go execute it? Can, like, all of the different things, you know, that you would, you just don't, like in my position, you know, on TV, I don't get that opportunity. I don't have combine interviews. I don't have pro day interviews, you know, with the guys to do that stuff. And so the Gruden stuff is as close that you can get to some of the interactions that you get in a quarterback meeting room. And I've seen those cripple quarterbacks where, you know, a coach, you know, like ask a guy to draw something on the board or explain something or call a play, and guys just can't do it. Mm. Well, you have no shot if you can't do that. Never mind to operate it, you know, on a football field. So, and then what you can see is, like, how much does the guy, like, take command of an environment like that? You know, like, how would he be in our quarterback meeting room? So I think that I think Gruden does a great job with those. I think people have tried to recreate them and have not done a good job of mm-hmm. recreating it. And I think that it's actually good and entertaining stuff that quite frankly, kind of goes on a little bit in some of the quarterback interview process.
Now, I have no idea whether this happens or not, but is that unedited? I mean, he's not going to put something out, Gruden would not put something out there to make somebody look bad. I don't think everyone seems to do well and has a good grasp of everything. I don't know how the editing process works of, like, man, this guy was really, nothing comes to mind. I know there are examples like this guy didn't know some of this or some of that, but overall, I don't think Gruden's going to do something to make somebody look bad.
Well, no, but like I forget who the quarterback was when he did one with him a few years ago. It was like, tell me the play. And a lot of these like spread offense, up-tempo offenses, you know, they got these like one-word plays. It's just like, oh, yeah, we'll get up the line of scrimmage. I go, Toledo. And it's like, that means this. And then I clap my hands. And so like in some ways for that, not that NFL teams don't know this, but like right. in some ways, you know, for that, it's like, oh, okay. Like this is going to be a big learning curve. Because now you've got to walk into a huddle, call two plays, you know, at the same time because you're packaging a play for a third down scenario, and then you're going to get up to the line of scrimmage, you're going to use this dummy cadence, you're going to go through all of this. Like, that's a big jump. there's a huge, you know, leap from that to what you do in the National Football League. So I've seen guys, I think, not look great in doing some of this stuff with Gruden. And then I've seen guys where I'm like, that guy's pretty impressive. Like, that's pretty impressive for a guy his age in that environment.
He is Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. We'll have more with him coming up next on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game, continuing our conversation with Tim Hasselbeck from ESPN and the head coach at Innsworth here on this Tuesday. What do you think's going to happen with this Dexter Lawrence situation?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, my guess is I think ultimately because holdouts and stuff, you know, have, you know, in this current environment are just so expensive that, you know, I think it eventually gets worked out that he remains with the team.
So you think it would behoove the Giants to keep him and not try to trade him?
Yeah, I think listen, good players leaving is always no one wants good players to leave. I mean, just look, especially guys that are in your front. Like, think about, Myles Garrett wanted out of Cleveland. It's so hard to let good players go. Like, look at what it was going to have to take to get Max Crosby out of, Las Vegas. I think when you have good players, even when they're unhappy in your front, I think teams, for the most part, find ways, even when the teams aren't good, to work it out. I mean, look, Jeffrey Simmons here is a good example. You know, the team has not been as good as, you know, Jeffrey Simmons would like. I think there's probably been times, not that he's said this, but, like, you know, there have been times that he's been frustrated and, you know, being moved to a better team he probably would have been okay with. But I don't think anyone's ever really considered it. When you have really good players in your front, it's unusual for them to get traded. It's why, like, the Micah Parsons trade, you know, was so unusual, right? And it's like, people couldn't believe that it happened. So, I mean, without knowing any details of how mad he is, what he wants, you know, what the Giants would be willing to do, I just think that when you have good players in your front, teams are really, you know, hesitant to trade them.
Tim, I got a question here from a guy named Leland. Says, Diego Pavia, if he does not get drafted and his options are the CFL and the UFL sticks around for a while, what would be better for a quarterback like Pavia, the CFL or the UFL?
You know, I would say just based on track record in terms of historically, you know, the CFL has helped. Right. I mean, obviously, it's been a while, but there are guys that have gone up and played there that did get an opportunity. And I think there's an element of going and playing there. You know, your commitment oftentimes can be longer.
Mm-hmm.
And so guys that do it for multiple years, you know, it's a signal to, you know, the NFL, like, look, this guy is going to do whatever it takes. You know, the UFL and you know, those types of opportunities are shorter, and then the off season they're at a time where, you know, you miss a lot of you know, you miss things that are going on here. So to get signed at the end of that season, you know, I think is a little bit different. So, you know, that would be my initial reaction to it. And then let me be clear on that. I do think he's going to end up in someone's camp.
Right.
And I do think that playing in the preseason, I think he'll play well. It's just a matter of, like, just take this as the example. Like, the Panthers are a good example of, you know, he was visiting them. Look, they have their starter. You know, he is a guy, their starter is a guy that's not a real big guy. And so would they ever say, like, look, third and two or shorter, you're going to play quarterback. If you're going to go in, and we could have power read stuff, we could have option stuff, you know, and we would trust you in the quick game that, you know, to be able to pass in the quick game. Like, we're going to do that. Like, could you do that? Like, maybe you could. It's some outside of the box thinking, have to take some creative coaching, but would they be better in that environment than playing Bryce Young? I think so. I think you could be. It's just a matter of if a team is going to allocate the time, energy, and resources to do that.
No, I think it's a great thing. Also, if you go to the CFL, I mean, the football is a little fatter, as I discovered a long time ago in the CFL. Does that help or hurt you when you're, I mean, because they throw the ball 80 times a game. Would that help you at all, hurt you at all if you try to get back to the NFL because the way football is?
I'll say this about passing up there. It's cold, right?
Newsflash.
Yeah. I know I'm breaking news on that. But, like, So and, you know, when Doug Flutie went up there and played, you know, that's a 5'9" quarterback going up and playing in brutal conditions in Canada. And, look, I think his experience in Canada gave people the confidence that he could play in a city like Buffalo. And so there is a difference playing in bad elements. And so, you know, in a passing league up there in a rough climate and cold weather, and quite frankly, the fact that his passing is, you know, lags behind in terms of, you know, how he would compare to other quarterbacks, look, that's why something like that would not be a bad move for him.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. On another quarterback level, this whole Aaron Rodgers thing, he's going to let the Steelers know if he's coming back. Why are they letting him keep the team hostage? Why are we doing this again?
You know, because I think he's still probably one of the best 32 starting quarterbacks on the planet. I mean, that's why, you know, they're entertaining this. Now, I will say this. I think last year, I think Aaron dictated – Pittsburgh's plans. this year, I could see Pittsburgh taking a quarterback. And so I think Aaron is a backup plan for Pittsburgh now. I think if things go a certain way, I could see Pittsburgh taking a quarterback. If they don't, then I think they'll say, like, all right, well, Aaron doesn't have other options. He would be willing to play here. Let's run it back with him. I've been on record as saying I think it's time to turn the page. And, you know, part of the reason I say it is, look, go into the draft Carson Beck at some point. Go into the season with Will Howard and Carson Beck. And then if it doesn't work out with those guys, you're probably drafting so low that you'll get a quarterback of your future or potentially of your future in next year's draft.
Tim,
you
know, how
bringing Aaron back, you're going to be picking outside of the top 16 picks because
right.
You're going to be good enough, and that doesn't help you.
Steelers should hire you as GM, Tim.
Well, they shouldn't do that, but I think what happens is like no one wants to endure. Listen, everyone thinks that they're going to have more than 1 year, but Aaron Glenn nearly got fired in New York,
right?
And so going into a season with horrible quarterback play, you know, Mike McCarthy's got his dream job. He doesn't want to lose it in year one.
No, you're exactly right. We're all like hoping the Titans take Jeremiah Love at 4. But at 2 is the Jets, and at 3 it's the Cardinals, and they got a lot of dance partners. Do you see him getting to 4, Tim? I don't, because I think he'll be really good for the football team, and I just think that rug's going to be swept out underneath everybody. Do you think there's a chance he could get to 4, or do we not even know?
I think there's a good chance he gets to 4. Part of the reason I say that is, you know, when you look at a lot of these mock drafts that come out, you know, and I think it's important, and not that everyone's, you know, perfect on these things, because they're not, and there's a lot of misinformation out there. But, you know, a lot of these mock drafts, it's interesting. There's the evaluation of the players and maybe how the evaluator truly feels about them. But there's also a lot of talking to other teams. There's a lot of information shared. And I think when guys put together these mock drafts, you know, they're not blind mock drafts. They're with information of people that are involved in this. And I've seen some where Love gets, I think I saw him get to, was it 12?
Wow.
Or 10? I think he got to 10. You know, so he got all the way to 10. So, and this was one that, you know, I think ESPN had done with, you know, a number of our guys that are involved in it, you know, so it was Mel, but, you know, it was other guys that are involved in the process. It's like, wow, he got all the way to 12 or 10. I think it was 10. So I do think there's a chance he's still there at 4, because there's probably enough information out there that, you know, people are, you know, so this run on defensive ends is going to happen, you know, early. And here's the other thing. I feel like in this mock draft I'm referring to, I think they had Bailey going to the Titans, right?
Oh,
so
yeah.
Not only do they have him getting to 4, but they have, you know, the Titans selecting the edge rusher.
It depends on what draft you look, mock draft you look at. You've seen Bailey, you've seen Bain, you've seen Reese, you've seen Love. I mean, so it's kind of one of those four guys going to the Titans, depending on who's making the mock draft.
And don't you feel like it's been more Bailey than anyone else?
Probably, yeah. I feel like
that surprised me a little bit that Bain hasn't been there more.
Yeah, well, and I see him kind of moving towards the end of the top 10. Is what I've seen, but I have seen quite a few people say Love. So,
well, here's part of what I'll say on Love is Schefter. Now, it's a while ago, but look, Adam's the best in the business. Adam is the absolute best in the business. In draft season, there's a lot of misinformation and stuff like that. Adam was pretty strong about, I don't want to say it was a month ago, but it, you know, a few weeks ago, where he's like, I don't see the Titans taking Love. You know, it was like a pretty direct thing. Now, I don't know if he's softened that or anything like that, but that to me is newsworthy when he says something as definitive as that. So, look, I think it could be Love. I think Love makes a ton of sense. I think Love makes sense to the Titans. I think it makes sense to the Commanders. I think it makes sense to the Giants. Like, I think it makes sense to those three teams in a very, very big way. So, you know, I just, when Adam makes a comment like that, that gets my attention.
Are you saying that Love makes sense to the Titans because the Titans simply just, you know, can use more offensive weapons? Or do you think Love makes sense for Cam Ward?
I think it makes sense for Cam Ward. And I look, running back is a position I truly believe you can find outside of the first round. Just look at the league right now. There's plenty of productive players that you didn't come into the league as first rounders. And then there are some that came into the league as first rounders that aren't that great. Then there are the select few that they came in the first round and you're like, holy cow, this guy's going to change our franchise. Saquon Barkley, Bijan Robinson, guys like that. And I think there's an element of Love that he's so physically talented and his skill set as somebody that you don't just have to hand the ball to him, that you can say, we can get this guy 20 touches. It's easy to get your running back touches. We can get this guy 20 touches. To have somebody touch the ball 20 times in your offense, that's a massive impact. It's touching the ball more than anybody other than your quarterback. And so that's why I think for a young quarterback, a running back that is elite can change a lot.
Isn't it funny how we've spent the last 10 years devaluing running backs, and yet now it's like, we want Jeremiah Love. Listen, I tell
people.
You have
to have one.
We will never devalue running backs. It's they're part of the game forever. As much as they try to get rid of them, they're always going to be there.
But you can't overvalue the ones that aren't special.
Yes, correct.
Like that to me ends up being the difference. Like, you know, not to, like, someone have, you know, shrapnel here, but like, you know, like Donald Brown, it was late first round, but Donald Brown was drafted in the first round. Like, you know, the Colts were on a run of it. Like, it was like, I think Joseph Addai was drafted in the first round. It was like, I mean, really? Like, did you need to? But like the special guys, it makes sense. If you're going to draft somebody that's not special at running back in the first round, like, that to me doesn't make sense. The special player makes sense in spades. It does. So that's what's valuable. What's valuable is the guy that can play longer than most running backs do, the guy that can handle, I think it was Saquon Barkley. I think Saquon Barkley touched the football about 350 times his rookie season.
Ooh.
Special running backs can do that. So, and look, we would agree probably, like Bijan Robinson, like that guy's different than other running backs.
Yeah.
So, I just, you know, Christian McCaffrey, because of his versatility, he's different than other running backs, first round. You know, Derrick Henry, we saw it here, like defensive end, playing tailback, like different than other running backs. But then there are other guys where it's like, he's good, but I don't know how great he is.
Let me ask real quick for you. I know we're over the thing, but I love talking to you about football. Do you tell your running backs when they're hitting the sideline to get out of bounds or take the contact if they get more yards? And I ask this because I remember when Kiffin was in Knoxville, one of the running backs went out of bounds, and he's like, we always seek contact. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not a big Lane Kiffin fan, but I like that mentality. But also, that's a wear and tear on a running back. So it's a fine line, right?
It is. I think you need to finish runs. I think you need to finish runs. That's what I think you need to do. Now, are there environments where it does make sense for some guys to, you know, take hits off their bodies? In pro football, guys been in the back for a long time, and there's maybe some scenarios where, you know, it makes more sense to fight another day. It is. Like, I'll admit that. But I think the general rule of thumb would be finish runs.
Love it.
And so, like, that's just, you know, I think there's an element of that makes sense. And by the way, listen, I don't mind you guys keeping me longer because, like, look, if I can prove to people at 52 years old that I can finish segments and hits that go longer,
yes,
at my age, then, like, I can finish them, then I'm going to do that. All right?
Well, hey, I'm glad to know that. By the way, Elizabeth called us and wants to go look at some homes, so we'll let you know what we find.
Yes. Sorry, okay, buddy.
All right. You guys are the best. Good to be on with you.
Thank you, Tim. Happy birthday, man.
See you, fellas.
See ya. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and the head coach at Innsbruck. That's pretty good.
I just love pure football talk like that. I mean, that's from the coach's mindset and from his experience as a quarterback. I love that segment.
Yeah,
man.
No, it's about, and that what he was saying about Love right there. I mean, that's why I wanted to ask that. Is he a fit for the Titans or is he a fit for Cam Ward?
Great question.
And you heard he was very quick to say Cam Ward. We'll react to that and much more. Coming up next, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Tuesday. Appreciate Tim Hasselbeck for joining us.
It's a great song, buddy. Good call.
It is. I love our texters too. Half of these I can't read, but they're just. They're
is
good.
It back to our question of the day?
No, it's about love and.
Okay.
Different things.
All right.
Yeah. Touching the ball and. Yeah, we'll just leave it at that.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, and now you know Tim gets me even more excited about Jeremiah Love coming here. Even more reason for my heart to be crushed on draft night.
That's what I'm worried about.
When Jerry Jones trades with the Jets and takes Jeremiah Love at two.
I know. We're gonna be doing the show, and it's like just like here we go, and then third overall pick.
Will you be disappointed if Reuben Bain shows up here now with all the Love talk?
No.
It's tough.
No,
I mean, it's like.
But I do think that Love is my. Well,
it's a good movie on behind you.
Okay, well, on the stream where the TV is behind me, it was just a very weird view.
It's Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, that song. I know.
Let me ask you this question, and I'll ask our listeners this too as well. If you don't get Jeremiah Love, where do you hope he doesn't go to?
Well, I would say the easy answer is anywhere in the AFC South.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good question. Baltimore? Not that I think they would.
Right.
But, I mean, at what point do they start thinking life after Derrick Henry? I mean, what is his...
Didn't the Jags lose ETN? Did they have a running back?
No, yeah, yeah.
The Saints.
Yeah, ETN went to the Saints.
I mean, could the Jags
back there,
put together a package with the Cardinals and say, look... I mean, you put Jeremiah Love with the Jags and how well Lawrence played at the end of last year and that team coming together. They got it. The Jacksonville defense is massively underrated. That's a good defense. If somehow Jacksonville squeezes up to two or three, that is the worst case scenario for the Tennessee Titans if Love goes to one of those teams. Now you're facing him for the 6-7 years. Even if he's average, you're facing him for the next 6-7 years.
So Derrick Henry this year, his cap hit is about 5.6. Next year, that cap hit at 33 goes to 16.2.
Bye.
Now the dead cap is 14, so you're only saving a couple million.
Okay.
But you know, there's some void years and other things. So he's scheduled to be a restricted free agent in 2028 at age 34.
If you are. I'm going to go back to the Jags because I don't think the Ravens are in play here. Do you give up a lot to get Love? I would.
Do they even have a first-round pick?
I don't know. Did they give it up for – who'd they get back for – did they trade the guys?
Cleveland has their first-round pick.
Yeah, because with Hunter, right?
That's correct. Wasn't
that part of the trade to get Hunter?
God.
So I don't even think they have a first-round pick.
Okay.
So, I mean, they would have to.
Colts aren't moving up because they got their running back.
The one I'd be worried about in division is Houston. I mean, you say no?
Now, they got like five running backs that are 30 years old. It's like Nick Chubb.
Yeah, but they don't have Jeremiah Love. I don't think they have a first round pick either.
But didn't they trade for Montgomery?
Yeah,
that's right. They did.
Montgomery.
That's right. They did. They don't have a first round pick either.
Yeah, I don't know. I just good. Now I feel better now that the Jags don't have a – and the Colts aren't going to do anything, and the Jags don't have a pick. So we're good there. That makes me feel a bit better. But I just – the Jets, man, and the Cardinals, the hapless Arizona Cardinals are going to do something. They need so much that they trade that third pick and gobble up so many other draft assets and capital, whatever you call it, on down – so they could load that team up because they're in the division where three teams in their division can win the Super Bowl, and they can't. And they still lost to the Titans last year. This is a pivotal scene in Silence of the Lambs. Do you know where he goes to help? You know where that senator's from in Silence of the Lambs?
No.
Tennessee.
Oh, really?
He's in Memphis.
Memphis.
He's like, Senator, your suit looks great.
We'll come back with more in hour number two of Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Tuesday. You can listen to us, obviously, on the air on the Game Nashville app and also on YouTube at 102.5 The Game. So be sure to subscribe and check us out on the YouTube channel. See our smiling faces. Joe's got a little bit of a scowl.
Yeah, I do, because I'm worried about the Cardinals and the Jets ruining my draft night experience.
They could.
I really think Love could be such a great asset to this football team that would help Cam Moore. And that was a great question you asked Tim. Would help Cam. It's a la McNair George.
Big time.
Right? I mean,
well, that's what Coach told us.
That's exactly what Fisher said. You know, and so to see that is so tangible. I mean, it's right there, but you got to worry what's going to happen 2 and 3. I mean, so is this scenario that the Titans are scared? They move up to 2? I mean, I don't know. I mean, this is – if I'm Borgonzi, I don't sleep the next 16 days.
Yeah.
I just don't, because it's so much could happen right there to say, hey, man, what's going on?
Well, because, I mean, a scenario that I wouldn't necessarily want is to have to trade up to get him. If they've said Love is the guy. Now, I do think it's interesting what Tim said, that Schefter basically feels like they won't take Love. But if they're like, Love is our guy, you know, it kind of goes back to, remember, we've heard Jeff Fisher and Floyd Reese tell the story of Javon Kearse, and that when they pretty much were all in agreement, we really want him. You know, they were freaking out that Tampa was going to trade up to get him.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
You know, and, you know, Floyd told the story of calling Richie McKay, saying, you know, and it's like, no, we're taking McFarland. He goes, oh, okay. And
yeah, like, have a good day. Have a good draft.
Yeah.
Well, take care of yourself.
Yeah. So it's like they, you know, they knew they were good. But I'll be very curious because, you know, every mock you look at has pass rush basically going to the Jets and the Cardinals. But
right. And what we don't – I'm so sorry, the we thing. What the Titans don't need is a panic pick. Like, I think Treylon Burks was a panic pick when it happened.
I agree.
Everything happened so fast. Like, oh, God, we lost a receiver. Well, who's the best receiver out there? This Burks guy from Arkansas, who was not bad at Arkansas. I'm telling you, he was not bad at Arkansas, but that was a panic pick. So I think Borgonzi's – look, he's 18 different scenarios. If it's gone, this happened. All right, where's the card? What happens when the Jets trade out and somebody trades with the Cardinals and, you know, this person's up? All right, yeah, that's that card there. So you're going through all the different scenarios and you got to figure it out on draft night to get your guy. Look, I love Reuben Bain. I think he's going to be a force, a pass rushing force every play. I would not be disappointed, but I am just thinking that what could happen with Love and Ward and the receivers come together and Wandale Robinson, and just there's something building here. It feels good, and Love might be that last piece to put in there to go forward.
Yeah. You know, like, here's the thing on Burks, and I've always felt that it wasn't necessarily the A.J. Brown trade that got John Robinson fired. It was the fact that the replacement / reaction to the trade wasn't good enough to be better, so therefore he got fired.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, that's – you think about instances like that of, like, somebody does something and you point to, oh, well, that got him fired. Well, yes, but yeah. It's because what they thought in their head was going to be better turned out to not be.
No, and then, you know, he comes in. He had
the reaction.
Asthma, a little overweight, All things that went wrong. You know, it's like Robinson's probably thinking, God, please come in.
And Jimmy Johnson would have said the asthma field's over there.
Yeah, right. But this is your first round pick, so he's not going to go to that field. And just all the things that came together. And look, it's we could dwell another hour on what happened, but now the pages turn. Callahan and that awful staff is gone. And now you got somebody in there who's going to chew your butt, who's going to love on you, coach you up, make you feel good. And you got a guy who I think is a really good offensive mind in Brian Daboll. And then we can't forget.
I think Gus Bradley's underrated too. I know he's not calling the plays,
right,
but like I still think as a defensive mind, what he's going to bring is underrated.
And we still can't forget why Daboll was willing to basically give the franchise with the Giants last year to draft Cam Ward.
He saw something.
Exactly. Right. Now he's here. This is the first time I felt good about this football team probably since 2020.
Yeah. Well, it's like I said a couple weeks ago. I have this peace with where things are at with this team that I have not had, you know, since basically the 21 season.
Yeah, right.
You know, that after that, when they traded AJ, I was like, oh, no, they've lost, you know, John's lost her favor.
Mm-hmm.
Vrabel's kind of, you know, pissy in no man's land right now. Then he loses her favor. And we just go through this mess that we've seen the last few years. Now I feel like it is all, you know, leveled out.
Sure.
And you have a competent general manager. You know, I don't know what Brinker does anymore, which is fine.
Yeah.
I like him.
It's good.
Like, I don't care. But you have the, you know, all the assistants, whatever. But Borgonzi's the guy. Borgonzi's building the football team. And you brought in a coach that I feel, and we got to see it on the field, has learned from the first time around and the mm-hmm. mistakes that he made with a, you know, an organization that is big of a dumpster fire as this one can be perceived as. And he's worked for a good organization and a good head coach in Kyle Shanahan on a couple different occasions.
Yeah, it's good. And look, the 2019 was great. Team was great. But nobody saw that coming, right?
No.
Nobody. Mariota was a disaster. He wasn't very good. Then they make the switch after the Denver game, and then Tannehill comes in, and then they clicks, right? And they go for it. 20 had that same momentum. The Ravens beat him. But now you've got all these new guys who've bought in, and and to me, I'm telling you, there's one key piece player that's got to play outstanding for this team in 2026, and I'll tell you who that is.
Okay, we'll talk. And then I got a question for you, too. We'll talk about that coming up next in hour number three. It's Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games that's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.